episode of MD Vitamin. So our next B vitamin, B2, is riboflavin. It helps convert food to usable energy, which I told you, like, all of the B vitamins are going to do that. And it assists several of the antioxidant enzymes, so getting free radicals out of your body. Clinical signs of riboflavin deficiency include skin disorders, something called angular stomatitis, where they get like little cracks on the angular part of your mouth, your stoma. And also glossitis, which is a red swollen, sometimes you hear beefy tongue. And then also something called corneal vascularization. If you look in the eye or the irises, the cornea over it, you see there's actually blood vessels growing there. You don't have to have all of these. You can just have some of this. And, you know, you may notice that your skin is starting to bother you, or that you're getting cracks on your lips. So there's several medications that can exacerbate a riboflavin deficiency. One is Thorazine, which is an antipsychotic, as well as tricyclic antidepressants, an anti-malarial medication called quinacrine, and cancer chemotherapy agent known as adriamycin. Also, if there's chronic alcohol consumption, it has been associated with that riboflavin deficiency. But how much do you actually need in your diet? Men need 1.3 milligrams and women need 1.1 milligrams. So we're looking at, like, if you had 8 ounces of milk, that would be 0.45. So you would need like 3 glasses of milk in a day. There's also, for pregnant women, they need 1.4, and breastfeeding women need 1.6 milligrams. There's some experts in nutrition that feel that as we age, the RDA of the 1.3 milligram for men and 1.1 for women leaves very little margin for error. So if you're over 50 years of age, they suggest that you get at least 1.2 milligrams per day in supplemental form. And there are no upper limits for toxicity. So what can I eat? What foods can provide me with a good source of riboflavin? Milk can give you 0.45 milligrams. 3 ounces of salmon can provide you with 0.13 milligrams. And one large egg can give you 0.26 milligrams. And puffed wheat cereal also is a source. There is concern that there are subclinical deficiencies of riboflavin without clinical signs, that it could be widespread, including in the U.S., it's not just developing countries, but in actually what we call rich countries. But it usually goes undetected because the riboflavin biomarkers are very rarely measured in humans. Also, our special friend, the MTHFR mutation, is associated with higher levels of hypertension and preeclampsia in pregnant women. And low riboflavin can aggravate this. The riboflavin, which is the cofactor for MTHFR, it effectively lowers blood pressure, specifically in individuals that have the TT variant of the MTHFR. Tricky. Trouble. Anyway, riboflavin supplementation has also been studied as an adjunct therapy. Riboflavin can be an adjunct therapy in cancers, certain eye disorders, and also multiple sclerosis. There was a meta-analysis. A meta-analysis is when they take like a whole bunch of different studies, and they go through these studies and they determine which ones meet the quality measures that they want in order to include it in their large study. A meta-analysis shows that the MTHFR mutation is associated with increased risk of hypertension by up to 87% and of heart disease and stroke by up to 40%. They found there are people, and I've had patients like this, that they're on 2 and 3 different antihypertensives, and they still have high blood pressure. And they're like, I'm taking my medicine. You can't figure out what's going on with them. Well, let's reduce your salt. Let's get you exercising. But they just cannot get that under control. So there was a trial done where they took patients that had treatment-resistant hypertension, and they put them on a low-dose riboflavin, 1.6 milligrams per day for 16 weeks. And this actually resulted in lowering their blood pressure, and the reduction was specifically in the patients with the TT variant. So riboflavin reduced both the mean systolic, the upper number, and the diastolic, which is the lower number. Okay, we measure blood pressure in what's called millimeters of mercury. So every point is like 1 millimeter of mercury. So it was decreased. Their systolic, that top number, was decreased by 13 millimeters of mercury, even though 80% of the patients were on one or more antihypertensive drugs at the time that they were recruited for the study. And the addition of the riboflavin was shown to greatly enhance the achievement of their goal blood pressure. And some other interventions that we do, like dietary salt, for example, when you reduce dietary salt by 3 grams per day, you will see a reduction in systolic blood pressure by 3.6. And if you reduce it by 6 grams per day, it's 7.1 reduction. And riboflavin did 13. So almost doubled. That's amazing. The trial findings suggest that the excess risk of hypertension linked to this genetic polymorphism can be overcome by low-dose riboflavin supplementation. I just get so excited when I see how supplements can do this. How I got on my kick with supplements was when I was studying for my step one boards. There's so much biochemistry in there. The biochemical reactions in our body, like, they're so intermingled, all of them. Most of them required a vitamin or a mineral. And I thought, how can this not be huge in our life? And I knew that our food was really lacking the nutrition that it once had. So I thought, you know, I really think vitamins are for real. But it's also, you have to be really careful because the FDA doesn't oversee vitamin productions. So you really want high quality vitamins. Their mission is to make a high quality vitamin so that if someone did test the different amounts, that it would be the same. Anti-cancer agents often have various side effects that force patients to limit the dose or even to discontinue treatment. The antioxidant effect of giving riboflavin 10 milligrams per day with niacin, 50 milligrams a day, and coenzyme Q, 10, 100 milligrams a day, was evaluated in 78 postmenopausal patients with breast cancer that were being treated with tamoxifen. So they gave them these adjuncts of riboflavin, niacin, and coenzyme Q10 for 90 days. This supplementation effectively prevented the oxidative stress associated with tamoxifen treatment, therefore helping them to remain on their treatment. Now, multiple sclerosis, that's an autoimmune disease with unknown etiology. We don't really know what causes the multiple sclerosis, and it's characterized by progressive destruction of myelin. And myelin is like the wrapper around your nerves, insulates it. There's destruction in that myelin, and there's also the nerve fibers of the central nervous system are affected. And these cause neurological symptoms. So riboflavin appears to have a role in the formation of myelin and oxidative stress that's implicated in MS. That's when you give riboflavin to individuals that have MS, it's helped in their treatment. And a little interesting side note on riboflavin is that it is heat stable, but it's easily destroyed upon exposure to light. So that's why your vitamins are often in a dark bottle. And riboflavin can be destroyed after 2 hours of exposure to it. So keep your vitamins in your dark bottles.
As we wrap up this episode, remember that biohacking is a powerful tool for optimizing both men's health and women's health. Explore, experiment, and tailor these techniques to your unique needs. If you found today's episode inspiring, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and share with fellow biohacking enthusiasts. Follow us on social media for more updates. Thank you for joining us on this biohacking journey. Stay tuned for more empowering episodes of MDiva, Biohacking Your Feminine Potential. Until next time, take control of your health and thrive. The content provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. The information shared is not meant to replace professional medical guidance, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners are encouraged to consult their personal healthcare professionals for advice and treatment plans tailored to their specific needs. The host does not assume any liability for the information provided in this podcast. Any actions taken based on the information presented are at the listener's own risk. Always seek the advice of a qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.